NuckGallery.com podcast. Today's podcast is an interview of Andy Stone. Once again, following the interview, we will be playing one of Andy Stone's songs so you can hear a sample of his music. So stay tuned. Hope you enjoy. Hi, everybody. Welcome to NuckGallery.com. Today we have Andy Stone in the office. How are you doing today?
Hey, Clifton. Doing fine, thanks.
You released an EP titled In the Coffee Shop When. What can you tell us about that title?
The title is it's a title track of the song called When, which is the title track of the EP, and it's a song actually about meeting my wife, but it's also about how we all fall in love and the things that we find special whenever falling in love, whenever meeting that a girl or a guy or whomever you're falling for, you know, it all seems extremely important at the time, and it is to each of us. But then to people around you, it can just seem kind of mundane, you know. So there are two layers of the relationship, that for those who are in it, and those people who are observers. So the song In the Coffee Shop When is about two people who are meeting and they're kind of in this insular world. Only they exist for themselves and how beautiful it is. And, everybody around them just kind of evaporates.
That sounds awesome. You refer to your music as lit pop. What can you tell us about that title?
Lit pop is because I'm a fiction writer as well, and it kind of came out of that, and it's a play on words between Brit pop and lit pop. I'm also a big fan of British music, but I really get into lyrics and I like songs and artists who write about things, you know, thematically, you know, telling stories with songs. So as opposed to, you know, we're going to rock you all night kind of lyrics, I tend to go for, you know, the Kinks or Squeeze or XTC or of course, the Beatles are my biggest influence. And you know, songs are really about something that's a little bit more personal. Maybe it's a little deeper.
Excellent. What's the best part of writing and performing music?
I love it all. I mean, it's the best part of it. I mean, I think, you know, when you finish a song and it's just that feeling you get when it's done, when you've put the, you know, you've dotted the last I there, you put the last, you know, finish the last chorus, and it just all flows for you. It's a great feeling. And then, of course, getting feedback from people is also wonderful. I mean, when people say, hey, I really dig that song, I mean, that's a wonderful feeling.
Do you prefer performing live or being in a recording studio?
I like both for different reasons. And right now, I'm not performing live. I'm just doing a bunch of writing and recording. You've got more control in the studio. It's easier to be creative, at least in a more of a controlled way. You know, especially with digital recording. Of course, you can try stuff. And try different things that you couldn't perhaps do live. I mean, you can bring in, you know, a keyboard part for a very small section of the song and not have to worry about whether or not you have a keyboard player in the band, you know, that kind of thing. Recording live, you get instant feedback. I mean, playing live, it's great to be playing for an audience and just getting that, you know, that feedback right there while you're playing your songs. I mean, people, you know, if people are enjoying it, you know, as you're playing, and there's much more of an energy rush. It's a bigger high in many ways, but they're two different animals in a way. It's like two heads of the same animal, and they're both really nice heads.
Cool. When you sit and come up with ideas for a song, what's kind of the process there?
Yeah, usually I try to start with, you know, with an idea of, you know, what do I want to say. Sometimes it's just sitting around with a guitar and syllabizing, which is just, you know, finding chords and then kind of humming a melody to it and singing nonsense words. And that will be a starting off point. I mean, but then I'll get an idea either from that, from the chord changes, from the feeling of the melody, or I'll just, you know, have an idea and you know, tailor the music toward it. But usually it starts off with the idea and then, you know, a first verse and a chorus, and then, you know, it just kind of goes from there. You know, and there's always, you know, I kind of approach it as a storyteller too. I'm always trying to make it a linear idea, telling a complete story. You know, there's a definite beginning, middle, or an end in most of my stuff.
Good. Anybody you'd like to collaborate with us on a song?
Paul McCartney, but I'm not sure if he's available, or Andy Partridge from XTC. I have a friend here in DC who is a fabulous keyboard player. He's playing on this new EP and he's playing most of the keyboards. And you know, he and I, we don't really write together that much, but we collaborate on you know, the bigger ideas, you know. And he's great. You know, I'm not a very good collaborator in terms of writing. I think, unfortunately, that might be unfortunate, but I just, you know, I tend to have ideas and then bring them to people once they're kind of solidified and say, okay, what can we do with this? So I don't really think in terms of wow, this would be a great song to work, you know, this person on, or I usually think of, you know, this person would be great for it, you know, because he or she could sing this part great or, you know, play this guitar solo great or whatever. But I don't usually think in terms of, at least at the starting gate, of, you know, who could I work with on this song or on this record.
Currently you're located in Washington, D.C. What's life like in big D.C.?
What's life like in D.C.? D.C. is an interesting place. It's a pretty cool city there, but there's not really much of a rock scene. As you know, for instance, I used to live in Boston. I went to school in Boston. I lived there for many years, and it's got an amazing rock scene. D.C., there's not much happening in terms of a local scene, but that's not to say it doesn't exist, and there are a lot of great bands that do come through here as touring bands. But I'm actually, my wife and I are actually getting ready to move to Chicago at the end of the summer, so we'll see what that's like. I've never really, I don't know that scene at all.
Well, that'll bring you back to my neck of the woods.
Oh, you're in the Midwest, that's right.
Yeah.
Where are you exactly?
In Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. So that's, yeah, that is the neck. I mean, yeah. You know, it's not like the thorax of the woods or the, you know, it's pretty close.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Did you grow up playing and writing music?
Yeah, I did. I started playing guitar when I was about 8. I started taking lessons, and then I probably started writing songs when I was in high school, and then I just got into writing fiction and television and stuff and you know, put music aside for a while and then toggled back to music, you know, after, you know, stint doing, you know, writing novels and stuff. So, but it's always been a big love of mine and a big outlet. And, you know, it's something I really enjoy. You know, making music is just, I mean, you know, what better thing to do than make rock and roll? As far as I'm concerned.
I agree. You mentioned a couple books. What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, I've got two novels that are out. The first one is called All Flowers Die, and It's actually a book that takes place in the Boston music scene in the mid-80s, and it's a so there it's a you know it's a friendship story. It's a kind of a coming of age story in the Boston rock scene, and the cool thing about it for me and for a lot of people is that you know I used real bands and real clubs from the mid-80s, so there are readers are always saying or you know oh I remember you know. I had a reviewer once, you know, mentioned the fact that I used this obscure band, and he was thrilled about that, you know. And then the second novel is called Disappearing Into View, and that's about a guy who makes a conscious decision to live homeless, again, in Boston. He's a kid. He's about 15 when he does this, and he lives on the streets for 10 years, and it follows him and his life, and you know what happens to him, who he gets involved with, and the first two chapters of each book are on my website, andystoneonline.com, and then you know they're available, they're out, you know, in stores and Amazon, and the whole thing like that.
Well, I'll be sure to check those out.
Please do paperback.
Any strange happenings while performing or writing or?
Nothing too strange. I mean, I'm trying to be funny and trying to say something, but no, nothing too strange. More tragic would be the case. Like when my wife thought the little tweeter on my studio monitor was an on-off switch and pressed it to turn it off and broke the speaker. You know, that it's, I don't know, that's not too strange or tragic for most people, perhaps, but for me it was sad. She's downstairs yelling, it's funny.
What gives you inspiration these days? Any books or music you recommend?
Well, I mean, I'm a huge Beatles fan, and you know, for me it's, you know, the Beatles are ground zero of pop music, and then you just take concentric circles out. So the things I've been listening to, I tend to listen to a lot of stuff from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. The most contemporary, for instance, I think Belle and Sebastian are just absolutely fabulous. You know, they're wonderful. They steal a lot of great stuff and reuse it, like, you know, a lot of 70s stuff, but they make it their own. So that's like probably the most current stuff I'm listening to. XTC has been a huge influence on me, in terms of, you know, just songwriting and you know, the way they make records. It's just, it's always wonderful stuff. In terms of books, you know, I have a huge array of interests and influences, everybody from Dickens to John Irving and, you know, Flannery O'Connor, you know, the great Southern writers, a lot of European writers, Russian writers, you know, there's a whole bunch of people. I could go on and on and on, and I won't, I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
So you're working on a full album release, correct?
Right, that's right, yeah. I've got about three songs done and three more written, and I'm just going to try to write a bunch more. I'm not sure when that'll be done, but I am working on a full album.
Any other plans maybe after that you get done with that album?
I'm going to start a heroin addiction, I think, because I think that's a natural curve that I have to go to really be huge, and you know, and then, you know, that arc, you know, you have to, you know, yeah. No, I mean, I just hope to keep writing, you know. I mean, I you know, keep writing and you know, putting the stuff, giving life to the stuff, you know, via recording, when we move to Chicago, I'd like to get a band together and play it out some, but I'll just, you know, keep on recording.
Well, I guess there's a call out to any people in the Chicago area that's...
In the Chicagoland area, yeah, who you know, wants to be, you know, dictated to, you know, people who are great players who just want someone to say, play this.
Excellent. Well, I guess...
I'm sure I'll be taking up on that. I'm sure the phones are probably flooding with calls right now.
Well, I think that wraps up our normal interview section. We'll go into rapid fire.
Okay.
I'm
the target du jour, I guess.
Yeah. The first question is, what have you been listening to recently?
Beatles, the Love album.
Describe yourself in 3 words.
Tall, dark, and tall.
Who is the most influential person in your life?
My wife.
One person you would like to meet?
I don't know. George W. Bush, just to see if he's actually alive, brain dead, or what.
If you had unlimited power to change one thing in the world, what would it be?
George W. Bush.
And that's rapid fire.
Wow. All right, that worked.
Yeah.
I'm still alive.
Yeah. So the floor is really yours.
Okay. Well, the floor is mine. That doesn't happen usually, but what should I do with it? Well, the floor is mine. Okay, cool. Well, I'll just talk about my music a bit. How about that?
Sure.
That sounds good. Like I said earlier, I mean, writing is music that's about something, and I grew up with British rock and roll, I need stuff that's a little bit more interesting than the kind of 70s American kind of harder rock stuff. I mean, I also grew up with that. Everybody, I my friends when I was a kid were all listening to things like Kiss and Aerosmith and or disco, and I was, stuck because I didn't know anybody who was listening to things I was into, like the Beatles and stuff. And I didn't know about bands like the Buzzcocks or the Soft Boys or, the cooler, I wasn't old enough to like go into New York and hang out at CBGBs or, so the kind of underground thing. I didn't get tuned into that until later. But that underground stuff and really melodic, arranged, kind of well-arranged pop stuff is really what I'm all about. And that's what I'm doing. And if, I don't qualify my success in terms in any way other than if it makes me happy, I feel successful at it. And I hope it makes other people happy too. I do it for myself and I enjoy doing it for myself. I don't feel the need at this stage to do it for anybody else. I mean, I just, I'm not looking to be the next big thing. It would be nice, but it could probably also be a headache. I'm not trying to get a big polemic going here, but I just really enjoy making music, on my terms. And a good friend of mine, and actually the guy who is singing on all these songs, the 4 songs on In the Coffee Shop, when, he had a couple, he said, his advice is really, you need to believe in it yourself and not worry about what other people think. That's where he is at his stage. He knows his stuff has always been good enough or good enough to satisfy him, and he works hard to make it, good enough to satisfy himself, and that's the most important thing, rather than trying to deal with the accountants out there who are running record labels and such. So I think making it honest, making it true, making it real is the most important thing, and that's what I strive for, and I hopefully I achieve it. If I don't, I try on even harder on the next one. So that's about my floor.
Well, I kind of came up with another question, and I told you was done. But what got you into British rock?
I was 11 years old at a summer camp in Rhode Island, and my bunkmate, who was also about 11 years old, who must have had an older sister or brother or something, but because he was a huge Beatles fan. I mean, he spent 3 weeks describing Abbey Road to me, and just verbally, he told me the you know, he would recite the lyrics. He would probably sing the songs. He'd, you know, tell me these fantastic, like, fairy tale, like, titles. I mean, when you're 10, 11 years old, I mean, songs like Maxwell's Silver Hammer and Pauline Pam and She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. I mean, that's like acid for you know tweens or something. You know, that's like, you know, that's like the Grimm Brothers, you know, for kids. You know what I mean? It's like wow, that was just mind altering. And you know, after that camp and going out and buying that record, it's the first record I bought, and I was blown away even further, you know, by the music. So, you know, it went from there, you know, and from the 70s on, I was just always, you know, I was just buying Beatle records, and then, you know, discovered the Cars. You know, that was like another big thing. You know, I kind of, when I was 13 or 14, I discovered the Cars, and I, you know, shaved my sideburns and hired a synthesizer player for the band I was in at the time, you know, but it was all the same stuff, because it was all melody and arrangement and, you know, and counterpunctual music. You know, it just, you know, the Cars, if you listen to them, they're, you know, musically, they're constantly just adding more and more and more, and it's really, you know, wonderful arrangement. So, you know, I know they weren't British, but they were doing the British thing in many ways, and that's what got me into it, and it just went from there, started from there, and I just kept on going.
I guess us saying that we listen to the Cars kind of dates us a bit, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you can carbon date me probably, but the Cars were I was in school in Boston when the Cars had were ready to break up, you know, I think in my junior year, but they were huge still. They, you know, we call them the grandfathers of new wave, you know, because they really started the new wave thing here in the States, I think, or they were one of them. They were one of the probably the highest profile bands. Who did that, you know, thing. And you know, a lot of their stuff really does still stand up today. You know, I think later in their career when they got really into the kind of, you know, synthesized, you know, they were programming the drums and the bass parts and the keyboard parts and, you know, like Heartbeat City and, you know, those last couple of records, it got a little dated. You know, it sounds a little bit too mechanical. You know, they were relying on that a little bit too much. But the early stuff was great, you know, and I wish I had seen them live, you know, in the day, you know, at the clubs. I have friends who saw them live, and I wish I could have seen what they were like then. I did see them in concert, but it was, you know, it was just a stadium show, you know, so, which is never the same. But yeah, they were a cool band, you know. There were a lot of cool bands out of Boston, and some that, you know, became very big, and some that didn't, but it was cool regardless. I mean, Amy Mann was with Till Tuesday, and I remember seeing Till Tuesday when I was in high school. I used to sneak into these local bars in Providence, Rhode Island, and I saw Till Tuesday, and I was just absolutely blown away. And I'm a huge Amy Mann fan today. That's the other current contemporary artist I listen to, you know, all the time. I mean, she is just absolutely brilliant, in my opinion. She's a player. She's a great singer. You know, I think in many ways she's a female John Lennon, the way she's, you know, slips in and out of falsetto. That's Boston for me was, you know, really kind of like the American home of rock and roll and capital of cool, you know, looking for that next capital of cool. I'm hoping Chicago will be it.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this with playing your song, What You Believe.
Great.
Anything you can tell us on the song?
This is a song about, you know, how you're on a subway or you're sitting in a coffee shop or something, and you're listening to a couple of college kids, and they're talking about how they're going to change the world, and you're sitting there and you're thinking, oh God, you know, I mean, you know, great intentions, but just wait, you know, I'd like to see what happens to them in 5 years when they realize that it's not as easy, or they sell out, and the narrator of the song is putting this, you know, younger person down, you know, for her beliefs, you know, saying, you know, thinking it's great that you think you're going to do that, but come on, let's get real. When you get older, you'll see that you never are going to do it. And then the song turns, And the narrator realizes that that just because, you know, that he never actually, you know, did what he wanted to do. He never took the steps to change the world in his way. And he's actually envious of the young person. And so in the end, the young person wins, you know, so it's a very idealistic song, but it, you know, it turns, you know, it starts off and you think it's not idealistic, but in fact, it's very idealistic and very hopeful and very positive. Kind of like me. So I hope. So that's what you believe.
This has been an excellent interview. I want to wish you and your family the best. And
well, thanks very much, Jason. Happy Mother's Day, by the way. Well,
thank you.
Or to your mom, wishing you by proxy.
Yeah, I'll pass that on.
Cool.
Good luck with your move to Chicago, and definitely check back in with us later in your when you get your album done.
Absolutely. I definitely will. Thank you very much for having me on.
You bet. You tell me that you're gonna change the world. My smile knows better than to round that curve. 'Cause you're sincere, and I can see it's not a dare. You're too innocent to come unprepared. Your enthusiasm may not fade. That's only refreshing till a certain age when you appear in resignation or resound. Up on your polemic with no way to get down. It's what you want, it's what you need, it's what you say, it's what you believe. But I've been there before, at the very same door. You smile 'cause the writing's on the wall. I'm melancholy when I see it's not your scrawl, but that's okay. It's just a matter of course, it's what you want.